I'm talking today with Dr. Karen Alexander, who is a general practitioner here at Altona North in Melbourne. She's also a PhD candidate at Monash University's Department of General Practice. Thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure, Karen.
Now, you've co-authored a piece, a paper that's going in our 19th of October issue on the Healthy Kids Check and its cancellation by the government. Remind us a little bit about the Healthy Kids Check and when it started and what it's doing.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, yes, it has got a bit of a history now, the Healthy Kids Check. It came in 2008 as part of enhanced primary care. And it seemed to come from, we didn't know really where, who had been in consultation when it was developed. So it's a health assessment which is geared at four-year-old children as they're about to go into school,
right?
Because it's done around the time of the immunisations. So, you know, perfect opportunity, child is otherwise well, to perform some sort of health assessment. And I think that's probably the way it was couched. It's probably aligned with developments in the field of neuroscience and early childhood development. It all sort of fits with that sort of era. And of course, there was a real push at that stage from the Rudd Labor government for a preventive health program. So it was really aligned with that sort of context.
And why is the government, it's being phased out from 1st of November, why?
The reasons that have been put forward have been to say that this is a duplication of a service that's provided from other nursing services from the state, and that it's been more expensive than they realised.
Right.
And there have been no outcomes to actually demonstrate either the success or the failure of the Healthy Kids Check. So the way that they're saying is that they can't detect any benefit from it. Well, it's not a case of not detecting any benefit. It's really saying there is actually, nobody's really done the research to find out if there is a benefit. So there is actually only one study that I know of that's come out of Queensland, which was done by Dr. Ray Thomas's group, and this was looking at two general practices in Queensland where they looked at 550 records from children that had actually completed a Healthy Kids Check over a three-year period. And they looked at those records to see if the Healthy Kids Check was picking up things not previously known about, so health concerns not previously known about.
Yeah.
What they found was that actually 20% of those children that had the Healthy Kids Check had things discovered that were not previously recorded in the medical record. So it looked like there was a 1 in 5 pickup, which I thought was quite reasonable. And that was for things commonly speech and language issues, hearing problems, and what they termed anatomical problems. So that was one aspect of their research.
Yep.
But the other thing that they also found was that the Healthy Kids Check was better at picking up specific aspects of health. So, for example, an oral health problem, so a dental problem, or a vision problem, the sort of things that probably weren't actually being picked up in a routine consultation. So this is kind of interesting that actually, yes, 1 in 5 children had problems recorded that weren't previously recorded, and also they were picking up aspects of health and development that weren't actually being picked up in routine consultations with GPs. So it was actually did seem that there was some value to the Healthy Kids Check, but that was only in two practices, and that was in the state of Queensland, which is quite different from some of the other states. So we really needed to upscale that sort of investigation to really know with a little bit more certainty whether they were cost effective and whether there were real health outcomes from the health.
So it feels like it was introduced with very little evidence and now it's being taken away with very little evidence.
I would agree with that, because I believe it you know, there are a number of aspects of this. It's yes, it looked like they could have some value, but there were a lot of other things happening with the Healthy Kids Check being introduced. So, for example, it seemed, we did some research with practice nurses and GPs, and we were asking them how they viewed the Healthy Kids Check and preventive health care in young children. And what they said was that when the Healthy Kids Check was first introduced, the practice nurses seemed to be really, they lack confidence in knowing what to do,
right,
how to do it, and they were a little bit uncertain about the whole thing. But then as time went on and training schemes were brought in and even online training could be done and the divisions or the Medicare locals got involved with all that, then they felt supported and they actually gained confidence administering those sort of checks to children.
Yeah.
So whether they just didn't get exposure to pediatrics, so, you know, some nursing jobs perhaps didn't give them that exposure. So as they were upskilled, the practice nurses seemed to embrace this role. It was another aspect of their professional development, and they really embraced this role of looking after the Healthy Kids Checks. And now they're left vaccinating children, but they're not actually so involved now with routine care aspects. And they'll be, again, practice nurses will be left with the chronic disease management and the health assessments of elderly. So really we're talking about removing a huge aspect of their skill base, which had been well developed, and I think that's a real shame, and nobody's really talked about that. So one of the statements that came from Susan Lee when she announced this was that she was saying this was actually, the Healthy Kids Check was a duplication of services provided by the states through their child and family health nurses. So we know in Victoria we have very well developed maternal child health nurse services, and they offer a series of visits between 0 and 3.5 years, 10 visits.
Yeah.
So we know that they are very good. They have a high level of contact with parents. But even there, something like a third of parents don't complete that final visit at 3.5. Research with parents, we actually spoke to parents about this, and it seemed that the sort of typical scenario would be that they were highly engaged in the first year of life with maternal child health services, but then they got busy and they went back to work, or the second child came along, and so by the time it got to the second and the third year and the final visit at 3.5, they weren't always still engaged in that relationship with the maternal child health nurse. But in the meantime, what had happened, of course, is that parents were taking their kids to the GP with their illnesses. And we know that 92% of parents, I think this is a New South Wales figure, but you know, more than 90% of parents will take their child every year to see a GP.
Yes.
So as the services were diminishing from maternal child health, the GP services were for sick child care were picking up. And so they were investing in a relationship. And we know that for some families is what they prefer to continue with. So we may be seeing the families, you know, antenatally. We see them at the 6-week check, and we hope to see them for their vaccinations and obviously for their sick child care. They were investing in this relationship, and the alternative relationship with a maternal child health nurse didn't suit every family. They felt it was another effort. The GP already knew them.
Yeah.
So it seemed kind of natural to some families to actually receive preventive health care from the GP. There is a way forward. I think, you know, we've got to try and keep preventive health care for kids happening, and I think that GPs could do a really good job. They could add value to their consultations, their sick child consultations.
Mm-hmm.
We do this with adult patients, why not with kids? So simply recording a body mass index, interpreting, you know, so the height, weight, body mass index, making an interpretation and actually having a conversation with parents.
Yeah.
That could be done each time the child is sick. We often do this anyway to calculate an antibiotic dosage, so why not just push it that little bit further? And then There are other things that we could do. So in our practice, I've got these screens in front of us. We've got we use these structured developmental questionnaires with our under fives. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of questionnaires that are handed to parents as they come in, which really delivers a message to the parent that we're actually interested in their child. And so these, some of them are actually geared for general practice. They work well, they're completed in a couple of minutes. And it really stops the general practitioner from thinking they can eyeball the patient across the desk and diagnose developmental disability. That would be another way, you know, using PEDS questionnaires, parents' evaluation and developmental status questionnaires, incorporating those. And really getting back to maternal child health services, I think we could actually, I know in some practices they have actually had maternal child health nurses coming into the general practice and actually taking a room maybe on a Thursday evening or whatever. Yeah. It gives them security because there's other people around, and it works well for the practitioner, because if we are doing these sort of screens, we could then be having a conversation with our highly skilled maternal child health nurses.
Yeah.
We know that they're skilled in delivering the second stage screening, so we could actually be having this conversation and having a much tighter relationship with our maternal child health nurses. You know, it's all about offering choices and offering alternatives to parents, because one size fits all doesn't work in any aspect of healthcare.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.